You're listening to episode 8 of the Dogs Are People 2 podcast, presented by Dingle Days. I'm your host, Drya Dingle, and I believe that anything can be learned. If you believe that's true as well, then keep listening because it's the number one show to dive into serial learning and bring you the best tips, strategies, and technologies for pet parents. Today on the show, I am here with Monique Renee, and she is a photographer, and she is helping you tell your tales with tales based out of Northern Colorado with Silver Paw Studio. Monique, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. Just for our audience who may not be as familiar with you as a fellow YouTuber and a photographer, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, just so we can get to know you a little bit better?
For sure. And also, thanks for having me on the show. I'm flattered. Yeah. So I like to say kind of my journey began with a kitchen remodel. Not mine. There was a opening at the local veterinary office that I took my dog to. And when I applied, they said, oh, we already filled that. But it seems like every time I remodel my kitchen, my husband's relocated. So we'll call you if that happens. Sure enough, a couple months later, I was hired on at the veterinary office. And I did that for 10 or 12 years, which taught me all kinds of things about dogs and cats. And I think that's all we treated at that practice. And at the same time, I was doing photography on the side because I was raising a lot of kids and they were all in high school at the same time. So I was able to bring my camera to the vet office all the time. And last I checked, and I haven't been there a long time, they still had some of my pictures up on the wall, which is crazy. So then fast forward, I moved to Colorado about 8-9 years ago. And I thought, okay, now what am I going to do? Do I want to do photography? Do I want to work at the vet? I could do anything. Of course, within a few weeks, I was at a vet office. They're like, hey, you used to work at a vet. Come work with us. Like, okay. But photography just really kept calling me back and kept calling me back. And so after about a year, year and a half there, I said, listen, I just really need to do my photography. I can't get away from it. And so I took a year to set up my practice, my, studio here, all the back end things, and retired from the veterinary world. And what's awesome is they're one of my main clients here on the commercial side. So I do their headshots whenever they need them a few times a year. I've even done a video production for them. So that's kind of a little bit of a nutshell without gabbing on too long.
No. I'm always so interested to see the backgrounds of everyone that we have on the show. I've had some people come out of the zoology background. There's the law enforcement background. And I'm generally speaking in the dog training space, and with the YouTube algorithm, I have somehow landed on the specialty of canine scent work, nose work. Just started sharing my story with my German Shepherd dog, Disney. And along the way, somewhat teaching as you learn, if you would, just decided to share that with the world. But when I get to talk cross-platform with other professionals in the space, and there's a lot of overlap, particularly when we think about how we think about our dogs, whether it be in the veterinary space, the pet photography space, dog sports, how we interact with them. I mean, they're pretty much family members for so many of us. So I'm always interested to see how folks make that transition into what it is that they're doing today and the ability to share that with our audience, which I think overlaps a lot, whether you're a trainer or not. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I love pictures of my dog and capturing the moments, particularly when they're so young, and dogs, they go through that puppy phase so fast. And as much as we love them at their current size, it's nice to capture that early on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's always crazy to look back on a client work from even just 3-4 months ago, like, oh, your dog's all grown up now. Ah, what happened?
You were just little fluffy, right? Like, you're just little fluffy. Just curious, just because I like to know, I'm not like in a vain point, but how did you hear about the channel?
Good question. I remember finding your channel a ways back, but I'm not super in the dog training world. So I would watch on and off. And then I think our paths just kind of crossed because you also cover photography, and that's all I cover, really. And then you emailed me. So somehow we kind of crossed paths again here on YouTube.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. And that's what a great opportunity that is. Even when you consider like the times that we're in, where we're in remote learning and remote meetings and remote classrooms, to be able to connect with folks across the world. And photography has always been a joy of mine. Personally, I run a media company. And honestly, I personally focus a little bit more on the video side, but definitely grew up with a camera in my face. I can thank my dad for that along the way. And then lo and behold, I got a little bit older and I actually got curious about it. And, you know, as the technology's changed and the different editing softwares got a little bit into the Adobe suite and Lightroom and Photoshop. And I had my best subject ever because he never complains or tells me he's too tired. I can always snap photos of him, my German Shepherd dog, Disney. And I started to share that a little bit as well on my YouTube channel. The algorithm doesn't like you being all over the place, but I know a lot of my my audience came from those videos with regard to the pet photography. So I'm always going to weave it in there. One, because I'm interested and I know folks love to take pictures of their animals, and it's just because it's a joy of mine. How about you with regard to specifically making that transition from the veterinary space to the pet photography space? What interests you most about it?
One of the things I love about being on your show, I hope a lot of people see what you do, because there's so much you have to know about dog behavior. And, you know, I photograph cats and all kinds of things, but to be a successful photographer, you know, and I found that at the vet practice too, where I was the front office manager, but I also was involved in all kinds of things. So you have stories of that cat bit me and that dog almost bit me. And you have to look at that and go, why? What did I do? Did I invade their space? Did I not, you know, what was it that I did that triggered that dog to go, hey, back up, or that cat? It's so, so important to know the behavior and some training. And so I'm always telling other pet photographers and clients as much as I can, really think about the behavior and the training of your animals. And so I think that was part of what spurred it on too. And I can't not photograph. I just can't not do it, you know, to the point where the first veterinarian I worked for, he's like, do you have to bring your camera every day? I'm like, I kind of do, you know? So for me, it was kind of a natural transition. When I branched off to be just a photographer, not just, but, you know, instead of having two careers, have the one, I was concentrating on people photography, which I love. But then when I wasn't in the vet practice, I missed all the animals so much that I had two studios for a while. I had human and a pet one. And I thought the pet one would bring me more human, and it didn't. It was the opposite. And finally, one day I was like, you know, I'm just going to get rid of that. And everyone's like, duh, of course, that's what you do. You're pet photography. So it kind of all weaves together.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I just love hearing that connection and how the energy you bring. I would say that's what brought me to your channel, because, you know, you start flipping and you see the related videos, and I watch a lot of photography and pet photography type videos. And then I stopped on your channel and I was like, something's different. Something's different. And I can tell that you actually have a real passion for it, and it shines through in all of your videos. I'm like captivated. And it's like, particularly, I mean, I liken it. I make a lot of examples, and I have a son of my own, so I don't mean to like demean humans or anything, but I think our fur babies are a lot like humans. And you got to have that energy, particularly, and the patience, right, to photograph animals. I mean, some will sit still and pose, and some you have to get creative and get their attention. So just going back to somewhat the basics, because I know the main topic is being a pet photographer in this post-pandemic world, but I do want to kind of start with a little bit of a baseline. Not to go too much down that road, but just tell us a little bit what your experience is like as a pet photographer and some of the things you have to consider getting started. And then we'll talk a little bit about the differences and some of the tweaks maybe that you've had to make given the current environment that we're in right now.
Sure. Yeah. And I would say this applies to whether you're volunteering to photograph animals for rescues and causes, your own animals, your friends, or clients. And I used to have this talk that I would do all about, here's my top three things before you ever pick up a camera. And so what I'd always tell people at conferences or wherever I spoke was, I think there's three things. Before you even get into all the technical part of photography, because that's a whole different training, right? that's lifelong for sure. But first of all, like everyone says, patience is number one. I actually think it's number three. And first of all, it's safety. So I always consider safety absolutely number one. I do a lot of photography at the rescues too. And so in my little table set, when I'm photographing a cat, I don't want them to fall or jump off the table. If a dog is, you know, afraid of me, so what can we do? Can I put a longer lens on? If that animal doesn't even want to be photographed that day, let's reschedule, you know? So you got to think of safety for the people and the animals. So I think that's number one. I do a lot of on location photography, and we have pretty strict leash laws, like leave your dog on a leash. And so I'm always like, I can edit out the leash. Don't you worry about it. So safety, I think, is number one. And number two, which is, you know, where you kind of fit in, is behavior. Like I talked about before, knowing the behavior of different types of animals, especially like between cats and dogs, they're enticed by different things. I did a video about this recently where dogs love loud sounds and knocks on the door and squeakies and all this. Cats hate that. Cats want to see something visual. They don't want the sounds. They want to see something flick and swish in front of their face. So that's kind of the behavior portion of that. And then of course, the last one is patience. And so sometimes, you know, you do need to let them settle in. I did a session the other day with a lot of dogs, and part of that was just my patience to figure out this dog doesn't like to be next to this dog. So I'm just going to let them settle out, or let's put this dog away for a little bit, and really just reiterating to the client or my helper, whoever I'm working with, that it's okay. This is normal. We're going to work through this. And just having a massive amount of patience is actually really good, but I have to say it's number three overall on my particular list of being a pet photographer.
No, that's a really interesting to shape the conversation, because just, you know, a lot of folks, maybe even just like your day job, right? A lot of us think about safety as almost like priority zero, right? It's always there, but how mm-hmm. often do we bring that to the forefront when we're thinking about our animals? Not to say they're not domesticated or whatnot, but here we have a stranger standing in front of you that you may or may not have met, right? With this object in their hands, and depending on how much your pet parents photograph you with a real camera versus just a cell phone, iPhone, hey, what's that? Getting just familiar, like anything you would introduce in front of a dog. Hey, here's a camera. You know, how are we going to interact? And then that behavior aspect of it all, trainer or not, you know, what kind of vibe am I having with this dog, or even in some instances, a cat, and knowing the differences between how they interact with other people and what it is that's going to get their attention. And then, of course, the patience. And again, that correlation back to the human beings, right? Like you have to be especially just flexible, depending on the age of the dog, what kind of positions can the dog get in? All of those are some things to consider. And I was watching your video the other day about the pros and cons with regards to working inside a studio environment and then just being out in beautiful Colorado with so many requests to have an outdoor shoot. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the things you would consider thinking about those three ways you like to approach the photography sessions, how it might differ between being in studio and outside of the studio, considering your factors?
Okay. So safety number one. So that was the first one. In the studio, I mean, I have to be careful that they don't knock over a light and things like that. So I have weights, but I can close the door and it's very pet friendly in there. You know, we have a contained space. So it's a little different in the studio, obviously, but when we're on location, I'm often at a big natural area. So there's trees and fields and ponds and water and so like eagles and bunnies. There's so many distractions and other people walking by or riding their bike. So I'm constantly watching out of the periphery for all of those things. So I might be right in the middle of a photo session and someone's coming down the trail, and I have to see that, because if this is a reactive dog or an excitable dog, like, darn it, I just got him in position and here comes this jogger. I'm always thinking of that safety element out in public because I go to public spaces so much. If it's at someone's property or their yard, that's a little bit different, but there's still, you know, bunnies and birds and neighbors. So I'm constantly thinking about the safety, which is a great, once you know all the technical pieces, it's much easier to be cognizant of all that. So safety, their behavior when we're out there, I always ask clients, like, so if we go down by the water, is the water going to be irresistible to them? Will they have to jump in? And if they say yes, then we don't go by the water. You know, if I say, are they like laser focused on rabbits while we're out here? And if they say yes, then we're going to be extra careful during the times of year where there's a lot of rabbits. So the behavior aspects. And then I like to try to match my energy to what I want them to be like. So if it's a dog that's kind of like doop, 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 but the owner kind of wants a little bit more, you know, like, you got to sit up now, honey. Then I'm going to be a little bit more, woohoo, come on, let's go. If it's a puppy going like a little too high, then I bring myself down. Like, this is how we're going to be. And you know that, I'm sure, very well as a trainer. And then of course the patients. So there's some times where those parks and natural areas just have a lot more people in them, even though I try to find those quieter places and times. And so sometimes it's just not even my clients and the animals I'm working with. It's just having patience with the elements that are around me.
So right, those factors so much that to are beyond in. Your control, right?
Oh my gosh. Well, and you know, I'm used to scanning the horizon, like the ground. And I actually had a client where I photographed her falcon, and we were watching who was on a lead, you know, it wasn't off lead, but we were watching the trees because there was hawks and owls and eagles out there. And so not only did I have to watch for people and dogs and bikes, I had to look up and watch for all the birds. So you have to like have all these different senses going.
So you've got a lot of experience with this, and we touched a little bit on the handler or the dog owner, however we might want to refer to them, but what are some things that they can do to prepare themselves? Because not all people have had professional photos taken of their animals. And so I know if I'm going just from the human perspective, right? Not a lot of people, even as many cell phone photos as we may take of ourselves. A lot of folks don't know what to expect from a live session. How might a handler or dog owner prepare for a photography session? Because sometimes I've heard from other photographers that it's easier to work with a dog than the human. So what's their role? What can they expect? And what are some tips to help them going into the session?
Somewhere around, I have a 10-point how to get ready for a session. I don't know where that is. Some of it depends on whether the people are going to be in the picture with their pets, which I love to do. If they're strictly being kind of the handler, there's not as much for them to have to worry about. Like, they have to handle them and keep, you know, all the fur off their, or the leaves out of their clothes. But, you know, one thing I tell people is, first of all, it's going to look chaotic, but it'll be fine. I have a very different view from where I'm at with the camera. Just take direction from me and I'll let you know exactly how I want everything to be. You don't have to really worry about much. While we're there, I'll just, you know, we talk constantly. So I have another video online somewhere saying, I just am always making them feel comfortable, always making them feel comfortable while we're on set. And on set, when I say that, it's either in a studio or on location. It's at the session. I'm always trying to fill the gap so they don't feel like, oh no, I'm doing something wrong. Because if you've ever been photographed, if there's a pause and they're like looking at the back of the camera, you're like, oh my gosh, I did something wrong. I smiled weird. What's going on? Who's, you know, so I try to keep an ongoing dialogue with them, and I'll tell them, and little kids have pointed this out, you talk a lot. I said, well, yeah. You know, I'm getting to know you. I'm making you comfy. It's fine. Don't worry. One thing too for dogs is, if they're a high energy dog and maybe they've been home all day and this is a sunset session, take them for a walk. Please take them for a walk. And then maybe feed them half of what you normally would, because if we're going to give them quite a few treats while we're out, we want them to be hungry for those. And then they can have the rest of their dinner when they get home. But the flip side of that is, don't get the treats out immediately when we get there. So I try to tell people, keep those treats aside. We may not need them at all. And they look at me like, are you crazy? But there is some times where treats are detrimental. So there's a few things to do to get ready for dog session. Make sure that if they're high energy, take them for a walk, kind of put the treats away. They don't have to get new collars and leashes and bandanas if they don't want to. We talk about their style and what they'd want to hang in their home, things like that. If people are involved, I give them some guidance on what to wear, something that contrasts but complements, things like that. And then I keep the session about an hour. If there's a lot of dogs or a lot going on and we have to wait for people to pass, things like that, it could take a little bit longer, but I say, I'm not going to drag this out. It's exhausting. And every single time I get a text back from my clients, like, we're all sleeping now. Like, yes, it is exhausting to be at a session, but I will guide them through. So I try to make them feel as comfortable as possible the whole time.
Well, that makes so much sense. And just to tie that in with the training perspective, a lot of the same things you would do to prepare for a live session are the same ways you would prepare your dog with any other, I'm not going to say stressful event, but I'm just going to say different, right?
Yeah.
If it's about to be New Year's Eve or the 4th of July, and there's about to be a lot of fireworks going off in your neighborhood, and obviously that doesn't happen year round most of the time, right? So yeah. One of the ways you would help prepare your dog for that is a calm dog is a dog that's been exercised, and that's going to help with some of that anxiety, energy levels. Everything around them is just going to be a lot different. So anytime you're introducing your dog to new stimuli, something that you think is going to excite them, new environment, what is that? Exercise is your friend. You don't have to go on a 10-mile jog, like she said, their normal walk around, just something to get that energy out and help them focus on you or the photographer just a little bit better. So I like those tips and sharing that with the audience, because I think that was a lot of value added, because some folks just may not know. If you haven't done that before, don't be afraid, particularly if you have a photographer like yourself with that energy. That's going to make you feel so much more comfortable, because I've had a few sessions with other folks, because, you know, I take pictures of myself, but I would rather just someone else do it. One, sometimes you just like someone else to give that direction, and then, you know, do the back end work, and you're like, oh, these are so cute. But just knowing what to expect going into the session is just such great value added. That's generally speaking a baseline. But how have things changed, or what things have we had to tweak to accommodate for the COVID environment post-pandemic with regard to still being a pet photographer and helping folks tell their tales with tales, but with some slight modifications?
With my studio, I'm fairly custom. And so pre-pandemic, there was a lot of hands-on meetings. I would do an in-person consultation where maybe I can meet the animals or go to the location, like their house with them. And we talk about, you know, what to expect, all of this conversation, price list, things like that. And then also then we'd have the photo session, and then we meet again for the sales meeting. And then I meet again to deliver your order. And so it's a lot of in-person meetings. So what I've done this year is I do all of the consults by phone, or I haven't had anyone take me up on it, but Zoom, I could definitely do Zoom. I found that even the times where I met the dogs ahead of time, and other pet photographers might have a different idea on this, they're still just as excited to see me the next time. So I found that meeting with the dog ahead of time is helpful, and it's helpful for the client to know that I know their dog. But working with them on the day of the session, I necessarily have to do that. So I'm doing all my consults by phone now or video call. So that's nice. And then the actual session, I really let people know I've got utmost safety in mind. So I wear a mask the entire time, whether we're outside or inside. Now, I sometimes fog up, so I'll move it down if I'm far away, things like that. And I have long lenses. You know, I have 7200 lens, my favorite. So you kind of have to be far away from them. And so I'm always doing that. And I even had a special all last year where it was a 15-minute session. Maybe you had a new puppy or you just wanted a milestone. So we did an outdoor location. I wore a mask, long lens. We do the questionnaire ahead of time. You're feeling fine, all that kind of stuff. And then we restricted it to 15 minutes, and they had a gallery we went through online. So a lot less in-person meetings, and I have my safety protocol, COVID type things in place now too.
And that's great, right? Like, that's what so many of us have had to do, regardless of your profession, see what's absolutely necessary to be done in person and what can be done remotely. And then just considering that, integrate that into your workflow. Luckily now, most folks are kind of used to some type of virtual interaction where some things have been in person. And then the advantage of the 70 to 200, right? With that distance being a factor anyway, and you're going to get beautiful photos while also maintaining social distancing. That doesn't mean that's the only lens, but hey, it's something, it's an option, right? And we're talking about different options and how might one modify some of the things you're doing to help accommodate for situations that require you to keep that distance. So that's really great value to have. I thought one of the most creative things I've seen was the FaceTime virtual photo session. Do you mind touching just a little bit on that and how that idea came about? It might've been trending in social, but just, you know, how it came about with with you and what that experience was like for you.
Oh my gosh, it sure was. And obviously at the first part of spring, like all places, we were shut down. So I closed up my studio. And so I was trying to think of different ways to help people. I immediately made a video on how to take better pictures of your foster animals because so many animals were in foster. And then I started looking at some of the trends. What were other people doing right now? And one person even made an entire business out of FaceTime photo sessions. And so I thought, oh, gosh, I'm going to try this. And so my daughter lives halfway across the country and she has a puppy. And I said, will you do this with me? And we'll record this. And the concept is that we do a FaceTime call. I don't have an iPhone. So it was like Facebook has a video call, which is unfortunate because iPhones have the better resolution. So it's better to do this type of session with an iPhone. So what we did was I just directed her from where I was and she put her phone on a little stand outside. It was a nice day. And I would say, okay, move the phone up or down. And she would just leave it and go stand and she could still hear me. And so I'd say, okay, sit with the dog like this or that, and look at the camera this way. And we did some without her dog and some just the dog. And it was just, it was actually just a really, really fun phone call to do with her. Although the photos were low quality, even when I did some editing, they were still so much fun. And again, if you had an iPhone, they'd be lots better quality, but it was just this whole trending thing. There was people doing model shoots that way. And so they put the models next to a window and it was so interesting. People were being ridiculously creative. It was so inspiring. And so of course I had to try it.
If you're listening on the podcast or watching on the YouTube video feed here, that's a video that you definitely want to check out. I'll link it in the description below. And let us know in the comment section or leave us a review and let us know, have you tried a virtual photo session? I think there's a lot of potential there for any developers out there who want to take that to the next level. Because I think the one thing that I have seen most out of this pandemic is the creativity of people. And with us being in a creative space anyway, it's nice to see us using different tools. Like you said, it needs some work with regard to like resolution and whatnot, but the concept, right? The crux of what we're talking about here is definitely something to admire about folks being creative with regard to what we do with our profession.
And I actually almost got a client out of that because she saw that and she needed that for her clients. She says, is there any way we can make this work? Because I have representatives or clients throughout the world that I need photos of for our business. We tried to make it work. And the quality just wasn't there. Yeah. So yes.
I hear an opportunity out there, developers. Uh-huh. We're talking to you. I think we have the technology. Someone just needs to buckle down and figure that out. But I think there is a need done. And I really appreciate those insights. And I think the audience will as well. Kind of what you can expect and some of the tweaks that we've had to make, everyone, with regard to this environment. But it just goes to show that it's still possible to have a great session. You get a photographer with some awesome energy like yourself and some prep time with your animal to make sure that they're well exercised. And you're going to have a good result. We're going to move to something that we started on the show. It is our rapid fire questions. Yeah, I know, right? Warm up. Don't think too much about this. This is our chance to just whatever comes to mind, you can pass if it's not applicable and it's something that you don't have any feedback on. So here's a little bit about our rapid fire session. Now, I said at the beginning of the show that I believe anything can be learned, but when it comes to pushing out content, I also believe you can't educate, you can't inspire, motivate other people without inspiring, motivating, educating yourself. So help me push some knowledge to the people we have. What is the toughest part about being a pet photographer?
One of the toughest parts is, and I'm sure a lot of us would say this, is that almost too late call. Like, goodness, I've been meaning to do this forever, years and years, and now my dog has this diagnosis and we don't know how much time we have left, or my cat. Can you come out right away? And so that's probably the toughest part emotionally for everyone around. So I would say that's probably the toughest part. And The second toughest part, to take a lighter note, is that we hope to be photographing all the time, 24/7. Isn't it great to be with puppies all day? And it's really a very small part of your week when you're a professional. A lot of it is doing other stuff. So I wish I could just be photographing all the time.
No, that's good. That's good. What are your favorite pet photography resources, YouTube or otherwise?
Ooh, there's not that many. that's why I started my YouTube channel. There was no other pet photographers. There's one that started this year, and I watched some of her things. Some of it's a lot of editing and things. She just changed it to that Tog spot now, I think. But I watched just a lot of general photography channels. For some reason, I end up on all of the landscape photography, like the Thomas Heatons. And of course, everyone watches Peter McKinnon. He's just super fun to watch anyway. If I wanted to learn something techie, it's Tony and Chelsea Northrup. So there's all kinds of inspiration out there. I could probably spend a lot of time just watching YouTube.
Yeah, I got to get in more into the landscape thing. I think I've actually subscribed to most of those other channels that you've tune into as well. Instagram for pet photography. What are your thoughts?
I have to say, okay, I like Instagram, but I'm so frustrated with it. And I'm going to do a video about this, kind of like my new take on how I approach Instagram. I like it. It's very visual as a photographer. And what I find I'm really loving is just the stories. I have a new strategy for my Instagram feed, my wall, if you might, but I love doing the stories part and just saying, here I am at this location, or, you know, I'm getting coffee here, or my dog just did something silly, something I can relate to people. At the beginning of the pandemic, it was Bailey's Wisdom. So I was doing a story every day where my dog was just doing dog things, like sitting on the chair, and Bailey's Wisdom, sit in the sun whenever you can, you know, like from her perspective.
I love that.
So I love the story aspect. I'm really trying to figure out, it's a very saturated platform, what my strategy will be without stressing out about it.
No, that's definitely an interesting take, because I'm kind of getting there as well. We're not live on on Instagram, owned by Facebook, but that's part of been my hesitation with the saturation of the market and what you hope to get out of it, whether it be the reels, the story, your actually feed. A lot of energy goes into that. And then how do you transition that to your pet photography business and just staying motivated on the platform? So that's definitely an interesting take. One more for you.
Okay.
What advice would you give your younger former self just starting out in pet photography?
My younger former self. Oh, I do so much work around this for myself. Like, have confidence. I think you can do this. I think it kind of boils down to that, but stop waiting for permission. The only person you need permission from is yourself. You're good enough. We always want to be better. We want to be better. You know, your first step is very different from someone else's 20th step. So just go for it.
I love the positivity with regard to that. And I think a lot of folks out there need to hear that. I mean, hey, I need to hear that, right? You are good enough. Obviously, continue to hone your craft. I keep referring to it as a profession, because I think you learn on the job. I mean, the person you are day one is not the person you are 10, 20, you know, hopefully a lifetime into this. But I think you can continue to execute while learning. And I apply that same thing to dog training, right? Like, when can you actually call yourself a dog trainer? I say, hey, I'm going to teach while I learn. I want to talk to the professionals in the business. I want to do what I would call my digital internship with other folks who have more experience than myself. And I always try to cite the sources. But I think as long as you remain open like that, develop your own style, the thing that makes you uniquely you, if you would, I think you're going to go far. And just having that confidence, right? And I think January 12th is the day that most folks break their New Year's resolution. So if you needed to hear that, be motivated. That was really a great word from Silver Paw Studio. So with that, can you tell the audience where we can find you on social or the internet and otherwise?
I try to be everywhere under Silver Paw Studio, and that is singular. So it's not Silver Paws or Studios, Silver Paw Studio. And so that's here on YouTube, LinkedIn. I am on LinkedIn as well. Monique Renee, Facebook. I'm trying to be more on LinkedIn. So that'd be a nice place to connect. And I'm trying to grow YouTube as well. So Silver Paw Studio, especially if you want to know pet photography insights.
So subscribe to Silver Paw Studio. That's singular on the platform. Thank you so much. If you're interested in high energy, great information, and just a professional in the space, I put my full backing behind your channel. That's what resonated with me, and I think it will resonate with our audiences. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Jariah. Thank you.
You've just listened to an episode on the Dogs Are People Too podcast presented by Dingle Days. If you like this episode, make sure to leave me a review on iTunes and share this episode with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag me at Dingle Days. If you want even more good stuff, make sure to go over to www.dingledaysphotography.com to find the show notes in our blog, and head over to our Dingle Days community on YouTube so that you can connect with other followers of our training methods there. I can't wait to see you there, and thanks again for listening in. Until next time, continue to get after it and share your best life with your furry friend.